now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Welcome to a special edition of The Game. I am Gabriel Marcotti, and today I'm joined by Patty Barkley and Ollie Kay to preview the Champions League final at Wembley. That would be the UEFA Men's Champions League final at Wembley. It's not funny, Patty. The women's final is on Thursday at Craven Cottage, I believe. And in fact, since this is a freeform podcast, a brief digression. There's something called the Sports Journalists Association, of which I am not a member because of a vowel on the end of my name, but they sent out an email where they said, we've got 10 pairs of Champions League final tickets to give out for free. Only SJA members are eligible. Please send an email to such and such. And of course, I know a bunch of people who did do that and discovered it was for the women's Champions League final. And because they're sexist pigs, they were all highly disappointed. Anyway, let's get into it. We got some of the latest news, of course, that's happened yesterday. Sir Alex Ferguson, not very happy. Ollie, you were there. You wrote about it. Tell us what happened.
Well, it was the pre-Champions League final media day at Carrington United's training ground, and obviously there was an awful lot of interest. I think one thing to make clear is that although there were huge amounts of news, you know, TV news reporters and sort of newspaper showbiz reporters, etc., news reporters congregated outside in the hope of getting a picture of or getting a sound bite from Ryan Giggs in his way to training, it was just the sort of world sports football. It was the football writing fraternity that was inside. Inside the training ground, people from all over Europe, and it was said beforehand that there will be, you know, it's questions just about the Champions League final, and one reporter, Rob Harris from AP, simply asked about Ryan Giggs, and
ask about Ryan Giggs in the context of Welsh actors or super injunctions or anything like that.
I think the question was, Ryan Giggs is your most experienced Champions League player. How important will he be on Saturday? And Fergie sort of overreacted to that and said something like, all the players are important, every one of them, and was very sort of terse about it, and clearly thought there was an agenda to the question, even though it was a more than legitimate question.
But that's fine. Arrested. So, I mean, he doesn't... I mean, obviously, it would be great if people answered every question fully, and he sort of answered it with a generic answer, and it all ended there, right?
Well, in theory it did, but the Sky News mics, the infamous Sky News mics, picked him up a couple of minutes later while another of his answers was being translated for the Spanish journalists. He was sort of heard saying, who's that guy there? Who asked that question? Is he coming on Friday, i.e. to the Champions League final pre-match press conference? Well, let's ban him, or we'll ban him then. The subtext being that it was not legitimate to ask a question about Ryan Giggs. And although I find all this whole Ryan Giggs business very depressing, I think it is very legitimate to ask a question of Giggs's state of mind, never mind his importance to Manchester United just generically. I think it's legitimate to ask, how is his state of mind? Will there be any concerns about it? I mean, you might not expect an answer from Fergie, but I don't think that Rob Harris has done anything that would require infamy or being banned or anything. But the good news is his Twitter following is about doubled as a result.
Did Ferguson do this as is this a mind game from Sir Alex in the sense that this is a way of me protecting my players and flexing my muscles, or did he do it without thinking and he just kind of screwed up, or does he or what? I mean, what was the mind? Because obviously this has not helped United.
Ollie may feel differently, but I don't think it was a mind game on this. I mean, retrospectively, it will be said he's creating a stockade mentality, blah, blah, blah. But that's already there. And people always say this of when Mourinho goes off the rails. But Mourinho didn't help his team in the semis, and I don't think Ferguson's done his team any good. He may not have done any harm, but he hasn't done any good with this time. I think he was purely the man's controls his favourite word, he behaves like somebody said to me this morning he behaves like a mafia boss. That's perhaps a slight exaggeration in that I don't think anyone had their fingernails removed, but he does behave because of being cocooned by adoration for so many years, by being allowed to get away with his own way so often. It doesn't matter if you're 7 months or 70, if you're spoiled, you're going to misbehave, and that's what he does.
The only thing I might add is that he probably feels he earned that spoilage with his success over the years.
No one does. No one does. I mean, Sir Matt Busby was just as good a manager as Sir Alex Ferguson, and behaved with decorum at all times throughout his career, and will be remembered with much more respect.
Ollie, I see an interesting contrast in the preparations between these two sides, because Barcelona have basically put out shadow sides the last 2 weeks. He's kept them loose. A bunch of the starters were out on the town, or have been out on the town in the last couple of days. Guardiola's attitude seems to be to keep everybody as relaxed as possible, and it's been a long time since they played a quote-unquote real game. I mean, in the case of United, it's been slightly different. They had that huge game against Chelsea, obviously. Then after that, he played a mixture of, it wasn't a full sort of second string squad. They had that testimonial to Gary Neville last night where people still played, were on the pitch a half hour or so for Wayne Rooney. What do you make of the different approaches, and specifically Barcelona? Are they maybe a little too loose from what you can tell?
Yeah, well, that can happen at times when a team sort of goes so long without playing a competitive game. And I mean, I would imagine it's far easier to prepare them for one huge event now than it was sort of 10, 20 years ago when the sports science conditioning side wasn't as well advanced as it is now. And I mean, I would think that Barcelona, for all that we talk about Barcelona as an absolutely pure football team and that very laissez-faire about everything else, they are incredibly focused on all that kind of thing. So I'm sure their energy levels will be kept up, and they won't be able to sort of go, lose match fitness, match sharpness, etc. But it is a contrast, isn't it? If they've rested most of their players the last 3 weeks or so, and they've got to raise themselves for a big game on Saturday, then I'm sure the proof will be in the pudding, but it's hard at this point to say which approach is the best. But certainly there was a feeling among Spanish journalists that Barcelona have tired over the course of the season, and maybe this final was going to come too soon for them, but not come soon enough for them. But maybe the rest that they've all had over the last few weeks will make the difference.
The other interesting thing about the situation, of course, Barcelona, because of volcanic ash again, which many people feel probably cost them the Champions League last year when they were knocked out by Inter Milan after having to make this ridiculous train journey from Barcelona. To avoid this issue this year, they flew a couple days early, which may give them some more relaxation. But I wanted to move on to the game itself, and Patty, ask you to start breaking down the different components of this match. And in terms of the United attack, I think we if we expect or we assume it's Rooney and Chicharito in some form. They're going to be under. They're going to be against the defense, which is quite interesting because Dani Alves on the right, Gerard Piqué in the middle. Those are the two definites at this stage. But as we speak on Wednesday, we have a situation where Carlos Puyol, who has really only played, I think, four games or so in the last 3 months, and a player who, when he's been on the pitch, Barcelona haven't lost yet this season, I think I'm right in saying. He may have to play left back because, of course, Eric Abidal may not be in condition to start, and if he starts, you know, it's not going to be it's not going to be the same thing. How do you see that shaking out? Because, of course, that also implies Javier Mascherano, the world's smallest center half, yeah, lining up alongside Gerard Piqué.
Yeah, I think they do have much better options than they did in Rome 2 years ago, Barcelona.
Not a big Yaya Touré man?
Yes. I mean, that was they began with Puyol at fullback again in that one. He was the man of the match. He was magnificent.
He was fit, though. He was
fit. But, I mean, what he displayed in that match was great tactical intelligence. Puyol is largely regarded as a sort of Stuart Pearce breast-beating player. He's anything but. He's an incredibly intelligent footballer, and he proved it that night.
Stuart Pearce thanks you, by the way.
No. What I mean is the perception right of Stuart Pearce. Stuart Pearce himself breaks his own mold, too. So, Puyol certainly, you know, wouldn't have played all these years for Barcelona without knowing the game. Abidal is also a very intelligent player, so I don't think it matters who plays at left back.
But it matters if they're not fully fit. I mean, it does.
But I should think that will probably be the condition. I think, given that it's the last game of the season, Puyol will start. He'll start at left back. I wouldn't rule out Abidal coming in at centre-back, where the energy is not quite so important, but the pace is. So I think they've got tremendous options in the back four, Barcelona, compared with 2 years ago. Having said that, I think they'll need them, because the Chicharito factor has made Rooney three times the player he was 2 years ago. And Chicharito, of course, has been, you know, perhaps United's discovery of the season. They were not a discovery to the rest of the world, but to the Stretford end. I don't think Barcelona will be worried about their back four as long as Mascherano doesn't play in it.
Ollie, it's an interesting one with Mascherano, because obviously he moved to Barcelona with much fanfare. They realized that he wasn't effective in central midfield. He was pressed into action as an emergency center half, and over the last month or so, people actually really like him in that position. In Spain, when he's playing alongside a giant like Gerard Piqué, but is he a viable? I mean, if it does come to that, is he a viable centre half in a Champions League final?
Well, I remember before the semi final when this was discussed. I mean, I was very surprised to hear that he was going to be the centre half. I mean, he played a few games at right back for Liverpool and did a pretty decent job there. But it's a different kind of position. And although he's tactically disciplined in one respect, I mean, he does have a slight headless chicken side to him. He's not tall. He's not he's not even particularly quick. When we talk about Yaya Touré moving back 2 years ago, I mean, that worked perfectly and he did really well. But Mascherano, I would say he will be a weak link. I mean, maybe that weak link won't be exposed, but I don't think he can possibly be as effective alongside Piqué as Puyol.
Well, the problem is he'll be making his foul. The problem with Mascherano at centre-half is not so much the height, I don't think. It's the... the massive Ferdinand and Vidic were unable to prevent Lionel Messi from heading a goal the last time the two teams met in a Champions League final. So maybe height's not everything. It's the fact that he commits his fouls closer to goal, and a free kick can alter any game. And with Giggs on the field, I've just mentioned the unmentionable. With Giggs on the field, Giggs is a very good free kick specialist, second only to Beckham in Manchester United's recent history. So I think if Mascherano plays, I think Rooney will certainly be looking for those free kicks around the box.
Ollie, just finished down for us breaking down United's attack versus Barcelona's defense. Where do you see the edge?
Well, I think if United can get enough of the ball and can get sort of beyond Busquets and beyond the, in a position where they can attack the back four, I think there are a good possibilities for them. They've got pace on the counter attack with Valencia in particular. Park is maybe not as an incisive a footballer as Nani is, but he's certainly very effective. He had a great couple of games against Chelsea and against Schalke in the Champions League. So, I mean, they have got quality and penetration in the wide positions, and they've got quality and pace in Rooney and Hernandez. And I think if they get enough of the ball, they will score. But it's as so often when we talk about playing Barcelona, it's a question of whether you're going to be able to get the ball into their half, because you look at the stats every time they play, and Barcelona just seem to dominate possession much further up the field, and it's very difficult to get the ball off them.
I think Ferguson will have to come up with something different in this game. I think he's quite capable of doing so. I remember the game, I've forgotten which game it was, where he came up with the two Brazilian twins, outside right and outside left. Sorry, which game was that?
Arsenal in the FA Cup.
Oh, just fantastic performance. So, there's nothing that's not avant-garde about Ferguson for all his faults. And I wonder if for this game he'll play a tight three in midfield to crowd the space used by Xavi, Messi and Iniesta in front of the back four, and then play in attack two wide attackers.
Let's start putting some names in here.
Because one would definitely be Nani. And that's why I think that Nani can be the man of this match.
Okay, so you need to help me out here.
Yep.
Okay, so you're saying a tight three.
Tight three, yeah.
And three up front. Okay,
Or
two wingers and a central striker.
Two wide attackers, and a sort of a centre forward who drops off.
So let's put names we know. So the centre forward is Rooney. I'm guessing no Chicharito then.
Chicharito would play right.
You're playing Chicharito
right
on the wing.
Attack, in the same position as Samuel Eto'o was used 2 years ago.
Okay,
in Rome.
And your other winger in this scenario
would be Nani.
Would be Nani.
Yes.
Okay, so in midfield we have Carrick, I would presume.
Carrick or Park. I think I'd go for Park. The other two would be Fletcher, if he can play, would definitely be there, and Giggs.
Ollie, what do you make of the Barkley method?
In theory, it all makes sense, but I don't think we will see that team. I think what has changed the whole dynamic with regard to United for this match. Well, two things. One is the emergence of Hernandez, who has convinced Fergie, I think, that United's best bet is to play him ahead of Rooney and to go for it in some way, even if it means Rooney dropping back into midfield a lot of the time. And even if it ends up looking at times more like 4-5-1 than 4-4-2, the idea is at least, I think, to play the two of them together. But the other reason why that has happened is because Fletcher has been ill for the last few months. He came back and played against Blackpool on Sunday, but he really doesn't look.
The train is now approaching Junction at platform.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
Anything like the Fletcher of, well, the Fletcher that he can be. I mean, Fletcher's
big strength. Ollie, I need to jump in here on Fletcher because I need to ask you this question flat out, because I was making the same argument you did. I see him. He looks like a stick figure. He's obviously was very seriously ill. And somebody else came back and he told me that, and I don't know, Ollie, if you're a Prozone man, but he told me, oh, but Fletcher's Prozone stats show that he covered like 13.4 kilometers or whatever and was far and away the most mobile, fittest man on the pitch against Blackpool. Now, I only saw that game on television. Is this Prozone stuff rubbish in this context? Do you still think there's something wrong with Fletcher?
I do. I mean, I've not heard that regarding his Prozone stats, but just watching it and watching Fletcher fairly carefully, I mean, it didn't seem like he... I mean, if he was covering all that ground, I would suggest that a lot of it was following the ball rather than sort of, you know, closing down and marauding as he can when he's at his best.
So this version of Fletcher can't do, because there's another suggestion that's been gathering steam, is that that Fletcher is now somehow fit and he's going to be used in a similar way to the way that Mourinho used Pepe to stop Messi at the Bernabeu. You don't think that's a viable option with Fletcher in these conditions?
Well, I mean, unless there's a very clever game of going on, then I mean, the indications seem to be more that Fletcher might face a struggle to get on the bench than to get into the 11. His fitness has been seen as a cause for concern, and I think I've said on here earlier in the season, I don't think Fletcher looked right all season. I don't know what his Prozone stats would suggest, but even sort of the months leading up to March, when he was sort of sidelined by this illness, he looked like there was something that was restricting him somehow and stopping him influencing games in quite the way he had before. So I would be pleasantly surprised if Fletcher was playing. I think a fully fit Fletcher would make a big difference to United gameplay.
Let's talk Barcelona attack. United defense. I'm assuming there's not going to be so much surprise here. Please stop me if I say something incorrect, but the backside will be Van der Sar, Evra left back, Fidic and Ferdinand in the middle, Rafael right back.
It could be Fabio right back.
John
O'Shea right back. I think it'd be one of the brilliant.
You think it's the right back position is that much up for grabs?
I think it's between Fabio and Rafael. But
because that's the guy who's going to have to stop David Villa.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's interesting because most of Barcelona's attack, pretty much proven, I think, that most of the attack comes down Barcelona's right-hand side, where you have to deal with Dani Alves coming up, Messi coming over, you've got Pedro there, and that's the way that Xavi tends to ghost. Whereas on the left-hand side, it's often David Villa on his own with a little bit of help from Iniesta. How do you see this unfolding? I mean, what do you tell Ferdinand Vidic? And also, if you're Guardiola, are we going to see the Messi center forward? Or are we going to see more of the Messi dropping off?
I think if Ferdinand and Vidic see a lot of the ball, United could take a heavy pounding. I think that's why I think it's absolutely vital.
You just stop them further up the pitch.
Protection from midfield must be there. That's
would you press?
Absolutely vital. On that pitch, I don't know. Yes.
You'd send United out the
press.
Well,
I think the main thing is that Ferdinand and Vidic mustn't be exposed to the little men running at them, because if they are, certainly one of them, Vidic, will be off.
I knew you were going to say that.
He'll be off the field. I mean, I doubt if the bookies will give you a price against that. I'm telling you. And then you've got the problem of Villa coming in onto his right foot. I don't know if either of those little Brazilian boys is left-footed, but it might be worth doing that. You know, the way, was it Chelsea played a right-footed left-back against Messi when Messi was on the right last year? Can't remember. Who was it? Yes, they put Bosingua at left-back, didn't they? It might be worth looking at. You need a strong left foot to stop Villa coming in. I know he's not scored as many. I know he's not been half the player playing in that position, but that can't go on forever. And I think that right back's going to be a very important position on both sides, because as I say, Barcelona's vulnerability is the space behind particularly Dani Alves.
I personally think that if United do press high up the pitch, I mean, it's down to personnel and so on, but I don't like the idea of making a 37-year-old Giggs press. I don't like the idea of Hernandez having to press and maybe not being fresh when you do get the counter. I don't think he's going to do that. But Ollie, I wanted to get your breakdown here.
Similar. I would share your concerns about pressing. I think they're a much better pressing team when they've got Fletcher in the centre. Or if they had an Owen Hargreaves, yeah. I think that would make a big difference. Anderson, Carrick, Giggs—they're not Scholes. They're not players who are particularly well suited to that game. Park and Valencia can do it from the wide positions and maybe try and narrow things or make it more congested by moving inside when United haven't got the ball, and maybe Rooney in a different way can. Yeah. Press from higher up the pitch, but it's just very difficult. I mean, I don't think United have particularly got the personnel to play that kind of game. I mean, if you go back to the 2009 final, I think everybody was saying after that final, well, maybe this will convince United to go out and buy that sort of more dominant, more aggressive central midfield player that they arguably have needed, even in spite of their great success over the past few years. And I think Ferguson's looked out there and just not been able to find anyone. And
so he extended Carrick and Anderson's contracts. Paddy.
Yeah, I was just going to say that there was an element of, when you talk about pressing, there was an element of method in Jose Mourinho's apparent madness at the Bernabeu in the first leg of the semi-final. It was obvious what he was trying to do, which was to draw Piqué forward. And it worked. I mean, I have notes of that game. After 15 minutes, Piqué was standing on the centre circle, spreading passes left and right. And I think that was the intention. To give Barcelona as much ball as they liked for 60 metres and try to draw them out of position. And then Ronaldo would have got a pass to chase and then maybe he would have scored.
But that's so the opposite of pressing, what Mourinho was doing.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. That's why I would say, and also I'm not... I think much better to try and suck them forward and hit the space behind them. And that's why I'm saying it's so important, because... Wembley, that's why I'm talking about the pitch, because in Wembley the ball holds up, so you can hit. I mean, I don't want to come over all John Beck, but you can hit the corners and chase, and they'll be surprised because they don't know Wembley.
The interesting thing about that, of course, is that Barcelona in that first leg, they didn't press either. They stayed much further back, almost as if Guardiola was saying, hey, you want to play for a draw here? That's fine. Let's go. Come back to our house and we'll unleash a can of whoop-ass as The Rock might say. Yeah, but I want to move on to talk about these two managers, because sometimes it's always with a hindsight of history that you start to appreciate certain things. I was involved in a debate for the name the greatest teams of all time, and you look at their record, look at what they achieved, and obviously it's difficult to compare eras. But you look at this, and specifically these two managers, Pep Guardiola, if he wins this, he will have had probably the greatest first 3 years of any manager ever. He will have redefined his style of playing, one that there's no team ever that has had 70% possession. It just simply doesn't, that is average that over a league season. That just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. By the same token, we talk about Sir Alex Ferguson. If they win this, he's going to... This will be his third European Cup, which would put him, on a par with the greats that have won the most. He, of course, has a whole raft of league titles and everything else. And I sometimes wonder, and you don't see it when you live through the moment, but we are witnessing certainly one of the youthful prodigies ever, one of the greatest in Guardiola, and in my mind, one of the greatest ever in Sir Alex Ferguson. And Paddy, I'm not going to ask you, is Sir Alex Ferguson the greatest manager in history, and would that change if he wins his third European Cup? I will simply ask you, is he already the greatest ever British manager, and would he become one, in your mind, using your own personal parameters, if he wins this match at Wembley?
Yeah, it's a very, very good question. If he wins, I don't think that if he doesn't win, he'll be out on his own as the greatest British manager of all time. No, I don't. Because if you look back to the Manchester United that Matt Busby took over, it was considerably weaker than the Manchester United that Sir Alex Ferguson took over. After all, it had finished second in the league under Ron Atkinson the season before he took over, although they were struggling in the season in which he took over, otherwise he wouldn't have taken over. He had a lot more to work with and has done throughout his career. For that reason, actually, just to go back to what you said about Guardiola being the greatest young manager to come into the game, I think you would have to measure his achievements against Jose Mourinho's with Porto, considering, you know, the relative strengths of the two clubs. But it's certainly arguable. But yes, if Ferguson wins this one, he'll certainly be seen.
I don't want to know how he's seen by society. I care more about Paddy Barclay's opinion. Because I actually think Paddy Barclay's opinion is worth more than the mean opinion of society.
He will be, because the others... Up with Busby, yes. I wouldn't put him ahead of Busby.
What does he need to do to get ahead of Busby?
I don't think it'll be possible because of what Busby not only went through... I think one area in which he can go ahead of Busby is legacy. Busby left an aging team ready for the knacker's yard. Ferguson may well leave a team with which his successor can continue the levels of achievement. So that will put Ferguson ahead of Busby, certainly. If he did that, I would put him ahead of Busby. But no, I think at the moment I wouldn't put him ahead of Busby, no. I wouldn't put him ahead of Steen, who taught him pretty well everything he knows, given again what Steen achieved with Celtic as opposed to Manchester United. But I'd put him ahead of all others, yeah.
Ollie, you come at this from a slightly different perspective because I think you were still wearing nappies when Sir Alex Ferguson won his first European trophy with Aberdeen.
I think I was wearing nappies when I was 8. That is quite worrying.
Never quite sure. You're just so youthful, you know. from your own personal view, I mean, obviously it's difficult for you to judge Busby beyond what you've read, what you've heard, and so on. But at some point, when you talk about legacy, when you talk about longevity, when you talk about sheer weight of silverware, when you talk about doing it in different eras, do you put Sir Alex Ferguson out ahead on his own right now? And if not, how much more does he need to do to get out ahead on his own?
Well, do you know, I mean, I've read a lot on Busby and the sort of Manchester United of that era, and I've watched everything that not just the sort of BBC dramas, etc., but more relevant things about the team and about the success and about Busby. And his record, his story is incredible. I mean, to win, to take that team into Europe in defiance of the Football League, to endure everything that they did after Munich, and then to rebuild a team that won the European Cup within 10 years is just incredible, and it's a story that will last forever. But if Busby's record was judged by today's terribly demanding standards, I'm sure people, if he was subjected to the phone-in generation, the internet generation, the podcast generation, I'm sure people would say, God, you know what? He's had Bobby Charlton, he's had George Best, he's had Dennis Law, and he's rebuilt the team, but you know, he's only won 2 league titles since Munich. That was 12 years ago, and it's
excuses wearing thin. Yeah, Arsene Wenger could relate to that.
I'm sure at some stage somebody would come on and phone in and use the word, the phrase "lost the plot." the plot.
In terms of Ferguson. I was with Bobby Charlton on Monday for an interview that will be on in Friday's paper, and he cannot separate the two of them, and surely there can be no greater compliment to Alex Ferguson than that, given Matt Busby's attachment to given Bobby Charlton's attachment to Matt Busby. I think Fergie's record is just incredible.
I'd like to say, actually, since we're talking about a Champions League final, that in terms of achievement, I would put above Ferguson and Busby and everybody else, I would put Clough and Taylor. Clough and Taylor added up to managerial genius beyond anything that's ever existed in English football. I mean, they took Nottingham Forest average attendance 15,000 to two consecutive Champions League triumphs. That is something that I think puts, you know, it makes you ask of Busby, what was keeping you, mate? And Ferguson, you know, why do you take so long to do the obvious? I really think that that Clough and Taylor were ahead of anything that British management has ever produced.
But then you look at Clough's record post 1980.
Well, that's why I used the word Peter Taylor, because you take away Peter Taylor and Clough wasn't a genius anymore.
We should do a whole podcast on this, but we are digressing here, and I think back to J.D. Salinger and, you know, the kid in the back of the classroom shouting, "Digression! Digression!" And I really don't want to be that guy. So just to go back to this, most podcasts end with people asking for predictions. Most radio shows do. I think it's utterly demented. If we were good at predicting outcomes of football matches, we would all be wealthy professional gamblers. So I'm not going to do that. I'm simply going to be inviting everybody back on Monday, where we're going to be sharing our thoughts on what we hope will have been a fantastic match. In the meantime, you can go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find some of the best writing on football out there. You can web chat with me on Monday, the day following the game. Of course, I'm on Twitter. Ollie K's on Twitter. Patty, are you back from your Twitter holiday?
No, I'm still on my holiday.
You're still on hiatus. Hopefully you'll be so moved by events Saturday night that you'll come back.
I'm actually continuing my holiday on Twitter in protest against all these nasty tweets about Ryan Giggs.
Well, Toby Young, Boy George, Piers Morgan, and the other guy all thank you. Till next time, goodbye.
Listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.